Last Sunday's Lansing State Journal tore into the State Department of Treasury over its alleged inability to collect delinquent tax revenue. In a story by investigative reporter Stephen Reed headlined "Tax Cracks," Reed wrote that since 2000, Treasury has had to write off more than $2 billion in delinquent taxes owed to the state. He and others in the story suggest that oversight and accountability regarding tax collection are weak. Terry Stanton is a spokesperson for the Michigan Department of Treasury, who joins Current State to respond to the article. Good to see you. Thanks
morning,
for coming
Mark.
In.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start off with that number at the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
Is it true that Michigan has written off $2.2 billion in tax revenue since 2000?
Correct, yes. And it's not so much about the numbers. It's about how the numbers are presented or how they're described. And you have to put them into perspective. $2.5 billion stretched over 13 fiscal years. Okay, we're not talking about $2 billion that was written off as of today. Boom, it's gone. We're not collecting it.
Okay.
We're talking about...
Since 2000.
Since 2000. Yes. So 13 fiscal years. So you're looking at less than $200 million on average per fiscal year. Now, that being said, $200 million, still, that's a big number.
Still a mountain of money.
Still a big number.
Yeah.
It is. But there are certain costs to doing business, and you can ask that of any business that does business. There's a certain write-off percentage. And any government that collects taxes is going to have to write off some business too. And there are reasons why, and we can get into that later. But when you look at that 13-year period, it's not $2 billion all at once. Not to mention, not only, that over that same period of time, the department received and processed $312, $315, $320 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take $2 billion and $320 billion, you've got one-tenth of 1% perhaps that's been written off, the rest collected into the coffers. So
we
believe that the department has a very robust collection effort, and we work to get taxpayers current and help them stay there.
This is an intensely data-driven story. Does the department dispute any of the other numbers in Stephen Reed's story?
Well, again, not that I can think of right offhand, but it's how you present those numbers and the perspective you put them in.
So your point is look at this thing from 5 miles up,
sure,
rather than just become too preoccupied with $2.2 billion.
Absolutely, because okay, that's a big number, and it's true. But, again, when you take the long view, it's not as if at one point in time $2 billion fell off the earth because we just simply weren't going after
Understood.
It anymore.
Okay. The story, let's go a little deeper here. The story claims that sales tax, and I'll quote here, sales tax, quote, has the biggest collection deficit of any tax category, and that between 2008 and 2012, uncollected sales taxes after write-offs averaged some $700 million per year, and yet Treasury referred 12 or fewer accounts for prosecution each year from 2007 to 2011. In other words, it took legal action against that few cases, even with uncollected taxes totaling that much. Why haven't there been more referrals for prosecution?
Well, let me start with the $700 million figure, because that's a rolling figure. That, again, is not an annual figure. That's not $700 million in a given year. That's a rolling figure. So over time, we have 6+ years to work to do our collections, to use our various tools. So once an account, for lack of a better term, goes delinquent, we can pursue that account for up to 6 years. So if it hit the books in 2007, and we haven't collected it, it's still on the books in 2011. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So it's a rolling figure. It's not a point in time. There's $700 million, that is going uncollected.
But do you typically spend a period of years trying to collect from delinquent accounts?
It certainly can be that way, yes.
Okay.
It can be that way. And secondly, as far as the referrals go, those when you refer something to the Attorney General, that's a fraud, that's a criminal allegation. Oftentimes, and we disclose this to the reporter, you're not talking about something that was a crime or fraud. It was someone who fell behind. They weren't trying to perpetuate fraud, but you're working to collect that. So if the department believes that there was a criminal act or a criminal intent behind it, it certainly would refer the situation to the Attorney General. But that doesn't mean that we're only pursuing those 12 cases, because obviously there are many, many more that we are working to collect on.
But you're saying it has to rise to the level of criminal intent before you can even consider submitting it to the Attorney General?
Right, absolutely, okay. Because they're gonna take that and try to pursue criminal charges, and if the case isn't there that it was a criminal case, then they're going to hand it back to us and say, why in the world did you refer this to us? It's not a criminal situation.
Are there a greater, do you fear that there are a greater number of criminal intent cases that you just would be unable to persuade the Attorney General?
I don't know that
rise
that's
a, to that level?
Yeah, I don't know that that's a fair speculation. I think those situations we become aware of and that we are, that we believe are fraudulent or criminal, then we refer over. But we certainly don't want to be referring cases that aren't or that couldn't, hold the water.
You also refer to you refer to them in the article as difficult situations, mm-hmm. where the Treasury Department apparently feels a retailer or a business can play catch up on tax delinquency. A colleague of yours, Deputy Chief Treasurer Mary McDowell, was quoted in the article as saying, "Our objective is not to punish people. Our objective is to bring them into compliance," right. Unquote. So are Treasury personnel continually evaluating who might be brought into compliance and who might not? Is that just a part of your process?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I don't know that it's down to the macro level of, oh, this person only has X amount, but you have to determine over time, again, with our 6 or 7 or 8 years that it might take to pursue a back debt, at some point in time, there's a determination that it's not collectible. And some of the reasons are a death, a bankruptcy, someone has gone. They've left the state. They're no longer, we've got no, they've got no nexus to Michigan. We've got no way to get to that individual or that business. So they're, if someone's deceased, you can't get blood out of a stone. So there are particular reasons, or if they've gone bankrupt, there are particular reasons why a good portion of this is simply not collectible. It has nothing to do with the department making a determination that it doesn't want to go after this. That being said, Ms. McDowell is absolutely right. It's always our first inclination to work with taxpayers and to bring them current, to help them get current, and then keep them there going forward. We have the authority to seize properties. If it's a business taxpayer that has gone delinquent and not paid up, we can seize a property. We'd rather not do that. We don't want to have to take that action. We'd prefer to work with that taxpayer in the steps leading up to that potential seizure before, to make sure that it gets remedied. Taxpayers can also enter into installment agreements. If they, if they can't pay the lump sum, we can do an installment agreement.
You refer to a 6-year timeline that you have to pursue this thing. Could it be argued reasonably that 6-year timeline ought to be tightened?
Well,
how did we come up with that figure?
That's a question I can't answer. I don't know. I believe that's been the case for a number of years, and I don't know, how it was arrived at. But I do know that there are various federal and state laws that govern these types of issues, not to mention case law and other situations. But if you tighten that time frame, just trying to think out loud, you may reduce the amounts that you can actually recoup.
Okay, but you may increase it as well. It just may create more
urgency
in the situation. I'm just curious.
Right, no. But understand, if someone hasn't paid after 5.5 years or paid after 2.5 years, are they more liable to pay than they would otherwise be? I don't know the answer to that.
Mr. Reed quotes State Rep. Fred Durhall as saying that Treasury originally resisted the idea of a tax amnesty a couple of years ago, claiming that the department didn't feel that there was that much uncollected revenue out there. The amnesty went ahead anyway, collected $81 million, some of it from sources the department apparently was not aware of. Can you go into this a little bit deeper? It appears Treasury misread this.
Yeah, I think that's an unfair criticism.
Why?
The proposal initially came out, was at the tail end of the Granholm administration. And the administration at the time was not overly enthusiastic about conducting an amnesty. A program had been done in 2002, and there is some thought in the industry that if you do amnesties too frequently, all you do is convince people that, well, I won't pay. I'll wait for the next amnesty. There's going to be another one coming along.
Okay.
So if you do one every 6-7 years, you're kind of cutting yourself off at the knees, if you will. So there was a reluctance, I think, by the Granholm administration to say, yeah, let's go with this. And so some of the estimates on what would be taken in were fairly low. And there was a concern also that what you might do with that is pull money forward out of future years that you will collect, that you're in the process of collecting. Maybe you have installment agreements, but a taxpayer says, oh, well, wait a minute, I'll just, you know, jump into the amnesty. And so you're opening a hole, if you will, in future, in out years. Now, that being said, once the legislation began being reviewed, going through the committee process and really got honed down into what was going to be passed, our analysts, our accountants, drilled the estimate. If you go back and you look at some of the legislative analysis, they were right on target. Once they had the bill in front of them and looked at what they thought we'd take in, we were right. We were pretty much on the money. Now, what Mary did indicate was that a lot of the money, or a good portion of the money that we took in, was money we weren't aware of, which seems to bolster our position.
How?
That we are collecting what we are aware of, or we're working to collect what we're aware of. This wasn't, if the majority was money that we were aware of that was coming in that we weren't collecting, that would seem to make the counterpoint. But it was new money that we weren't aware of. Our collection efforts, we feel, are very robust and successful.
The article strongly suggests that tax collection is in serious need of greater transparency and oversight. You acknowledge to Mr. Reed for the article that under Michigan tax law, quote, the department's collection policies, procedures, and criteria are not public information, mm-hmm. unquote. Given the challenges in collecting revenue, can you explain to our listeners why more of that isn't public? Wouldn't
sure.
that enhance your ability to collect tax revenue?
It's in statute. It's in the Revenue Act.
I don't doubt that.
And it essentially, but I can't quote it for you, won't quote it for you, but it essentially says exactly that. The Treasury staff, Treasury vendors, and the like cannot discuss or disclose tax information or confidential information that you have in the administration of a tax or collections, et cetera, et cetera. The reason being, if I tell you how we audit and how we work to collect, you have a better sense on how to avoid that. That's pretty commonsensical, right? There is a host of information that's available. The contract that we have with GC Services to assist with collections.
It's a collection agency.
It is. And it is posted online. It's open. The contract can be read by anybody. The state posts its CAFR every year to show the revenues that are taken in. I mean, there's an awful lot of transparency here. But what we can't do as a department is let everyone know how we work to collect, how we audit, because then it's much easier to avoid us when we come knocking at your door and saying, we believe there's a tax problem.
Okay. We are out of time, but I appreciate your coming in. Terry Stanton is a spokesperson for the Michigan Department of Treasury. Thanks, Terry.
You're welcome.